facilities, the cost of acquired facilities, and in place after inflation, because once you build them, then you're going to cost more than they did. When you take the cost of facilities required to serve new development, and divide it by the number of new developments, and if you're going to serve, that's how you come up with this fee. If you charge anything more than that, you're overcharging. If you charge less than that, you're undercharging, and you'll be able to fund the program.
So you're saying, you pick out a location, and you say, okay, it's going to be all time, that's going to carry 50 houses, and it's going to cost $600 to build this farm. And you got 50, the line is going to cost $600, I guess, to that.
That's all due.
Where do you determine the 50 houses?
Well, it's based on the estimate of your growth estimate. It's based on, again, the master plan estimates the density of the new units that are going to be added over the study period. And that's what we try to do.
You're saying we're all going into sewer.
Well, and we're doing the same thing on the water side, too.
But they may not all go in, so you may not have this kind of issue.
That's right.
I mean, if there's 40 houses going out there in the middle, there's 40 houses going to that.
And that's why we're doing it on a pay-as-you-go basis.
I just want to point out, a lot of this also is based on zoning that is in the South County Plan. The zone, the densities, not only within the district, but on the outskirts of the district, of course, except for our sphere of influence or over the reserve line. And so the density issue of what we can project is based on the county's analysis in South County Plan. I know the more important, because all reports use that analysis. So you take a look at the surrounding zoning, the density issues that go along with that, in planning how many people are going to be living in the formal area. So if you build your facility, you do that, that projects growth. That might be a little simplified, but that is.
And none of those studies end up perfect when you look at 10 years. You have to start this.
Right.
Yeah, now is this growth thing, is the current district boundaries, does that include the sphere of influence? Okay, and that is clear that you do agree to provide COVID for all of the new development that comes in.
That's why the plan uses for a new growth, pay-as-you-go basis, you will not put money out front in new development until then. So we're protecting the district, and we're not bearing the risk in new development.
So, Steve, are you talking about for new development, it's going to pay for new capabilities?
Yeah.
Whereas depreciation pays for the depreciation of the present capability for replacement.
And as a new person looks up, they start paying depreciation.
Yes, correct.
These are the rates associated with the water capacity fees. Right now, they will be going from $2,055 to $789. They have been increasing, and a proportion to the size of the meter. Also, the installation fees have been adjusted because the cost has gone up. This is a small town, they want us to put a meter into a single lot downtown. This is what's up with all the fees that are being associated with that. Director Blair was talking about is the sewer traffic fee of the former division was $4,500, that's dropping down to $2,036 and moving up. I just point out by the second year when you add the sewer charge and the water charge, you see within $180 of that current fee. So if there's a break that's going to be basically 15 years thereafter, it's a lot and there's increase thereafter. And then the the monthly sewer charge for the Pomo division would be $16.75 per pole, and for the Black Lake division would be $19.20. And this includes a confusion of cash to see that account. Approximately $80,000.
And what's it going to increase to?
$19.20. Or $2.20.
The one that goes the first year is just the way.
Thank you.
What's on the 50?
$29.25.
That's what was proposed next year, but we're phasing that in.
Because of all of the tax rate. That's good.
Yes.
Yeah. When you replace your meters, are the homes that you replace, are they paying for the new meters?
No, it's built into the water rate support that the maintenance portion. And that's a critical program for that now, that just has a very high water loss. And when you look at the cost of that program versus the savings that you're going to generate, or the lost revenue you're going to recover, I mean, there's basically water going through your meters right now. So more than pays for it. So that has a very positive impact on the rate of revenue for the fund.
You know, a lot more of our water loss rate is going to be so 20%.
Like water control, different water. In the accuracy, I mean, when you have the 1 inch meter, it's measured down to about 40 gallons per minute. You go down to 5/8, go down to about 8 per gallon, so you pick up almost 50% a little bit.
And what is the point? The 1 inch meters don't measure the same amount of water very accurately. It's better on a small diameter if you have to go to low flow. It's more accurate. You have a higher flow.
Is the size of the pipe that you're buying for existing service taking into the fact that you will be putting in these smaller meters and therefore the peak demand will be less? In other words, you're sizing pipes in the system right now for large peak flows. And my question is, when you put in the smaller meters, won't that be reduced and therefore you'll be requiring smaller pipes to be replaced? And thus, we won't need as much replacement of large pipes and save some money there?
That's a good point.
Well, there's fire flow, but it's always fire flow plus everybody operating at 20 PSI at their house. So if you've got a 1-inch meter at 20 PSI, you have to supply a lot more water simultaneously with the fire flow than a 5/8 meter. So if people are required to pay for that, it seems unreasonable that you should look at the meter replacement program and the piping size simultaneously and not just be putting in large pipes for future development.
Usually the determination of what size pipe to replace with is made at the time that you place. In other words...
Yes, but what I'm saying, there are pipes that are currently being scheduled to replace and sizes have been picked. And yet you're saying you will be replacing meters. So what I'm saying is you have picked large pipes and you won't be needing them.
Well, I'm sure that was taken into consideration. I don't know, but...
Well, I'm not sure that it has.
I just don't know, how accurate your statement is either, so... but it's a valid point.
I think it should be looked into.
Yeah, both water systems are designed for fire flow.
But this water system and the boiler report was specifically designed for a specific fire flow while simultaneously providing service to all of its customers at 20 PSI. So if it's 20 PSI to a 5/8 inch meter, it's a lot less water to each individual house that has to be supplied simultaneously with the fire flow as compared to a 1-inch meter, which is a lot more water simultaneously with the fire flow. Therefore, the pipes would be much larger. I put a lot of pipes in, I know these things.
The water report took into consideration of the zone needed to provide residents in the community, and fire code, and design the concept and the size and space on that.
But that's with the current 1-inch meters, not with the 5/8-inch meters that you're going to be putting in the future.
Which will be less, what you say, with the 5/8-inch. Otherwise, the 5/8-inch is...
I would disagree with Brenda's statement.
Yeah.
Anybody listening to this to see the facts on that, I'll trust you.
I'll look into this. I'd like to make a comment on that. But, you know, having done some master planning, you must master plan for the total expanse. Okay? You can't size a line for 1-inch, but in the future, you're going to need a 5-inch line. Okay? Now, the other factor involved in this is the amount of friction involved in putting so many GPM through a pipe. The amount of friction determines the amount of pressure that you must put through in there. It also determines the size of the motors you must put on the system. So, I mean, all this stuff balances out. Mm-hmm. And this is one thing you have to take into consideration. But if you don't want to install, say, a 1-inch pipeline in there, then next year have to come back and install 5-inch.
Sure, and if I may comment on that, because I'm also one who's putting in a lot of pipes all the time, and then the question comes back to when you're putting in a bigger inch line for current use or for future use, and then you come back to the current users should be paying for the current use and not for the future use. So if you're putting in an 8 or a 10 inch line while you can currently do with the 6 inch line, then the cost of the 8 or the 10 inch line, I would assume, would have to be borne, would have to be paid out of future use funds or capital improvement funds. Is this a fair statement?
The size of the line is
very...
I don't want
to
address the board.
Well, I am addressing the board with my question that I'm asking. Sure, go ahead.
Now, if you have a specific question, if you address the board,
you
can see the question, you can try to answer it. But a lot of these little types of questions you get into are specific to an engineer. And that's why we hire qualified, licensed, bonded, certified engineers to have those engineers to the name. And they do these studies and they pay to do them. And,
That was a question to the board, Mr. Small.
We're going to go back and question people's certification.
No, the question is not, Mr. Small, but on people's certification. The question was, it's like right now I'm putting in a 6-inch line on part of my property next to some other 4-inch lines. Now, I'm putting in a 6-inch line not because I need the 6-inch line right now. I can do it 4-inch over there. They're putting a 6-inch for the future. But if I would really look at the way you're trying to separate cost on for the current project and for a future project, you should only allocate the 4-inch line cost to the current project, and the extra cost is something you're spending on a future project. So if you're saying that you're putting in a bigger pipe for future use, then that should not be borne by current users, and that's what I asked the board to comment on, or Mr. Jones, or whoever.
Jason, your comment is saying that, just so I can get clear in my mind, the point you're trying to make is that part of the replacement should be charged with capacity as opposed to straight line depreciation.
Yes.
That's the basis?
Yes, okay. There's the 10-inch pipe that should be 8, and that extra portion should be paid by the future development. Whereas the 8-inch
and
that required.
And that is substantial.
Yeah, we specifically asked Boyle to break that out.
I'm just saying that they didn't break it out very well. And I have specific examples, which we'll discuss later.
Mr. Long only has the data that he has answered.
Anyway, is there any questions on the proposed rate that
yeah,
there's
certainly a lot of them.
Get off on different things.
What about it?
So most residential use is following the top line of the road too.
I think historically, before I came on board, there were some rates that were adopted by resolution in 1991. The California legislature had most rate structures were implemented by ordinance. And so now all water and sewer rates are implemented by ordinance, where at one time it was appropriate to do it by resolution.
We're done.
So what are we going to do with this? Are we
going to
table this?
Let me just tell you where we are here.
We'll do some procedure.
The district uses a two-hearing process. What staff recommendation and staff report is to introduce this ordinance. By introducing the ordinance, the board is not approving the ordinance. It's introducing the language, the specific language, that it will consider adopting at the June 19th meeting. We're not adopting it, but you are. That, in turn, from a philosophical point of view, informs the public of precisely what is going to be on the table at the June 19th meeting for a public hearing and further consideration by the board. In other words, if you never introduce an ordinance, every meeting you'll be trying to put a rate structure together by committee. You know, and so the idea is to give the public something precisely what they can comment on and what they can come back to be prepared with. Part and parcel of introducing the ordinance is it puts the rate study into the public. It's already been there, but for practical matter, a legal matter, it puts the rate study in the public domain so that they can consider it and review it for the public hearing that would be on the 19th. So, I don't know if that's helpful or not, but I'd be happy to answer questions.
So, I have a question on this. I'm concerned I have that you've got this public opportunity. You've been with the public about 2 weeks, just for a few days after 2 weeks, to have read the whole study, understand it, and be able to make some intelligent comments on it, and you plan to vote on it in a week. It almost makes it irrelevant what the public says at this public hearing in a week if you vote on it that day, and you already have whatever changes you're going to make in place ready to vote on that day.
I think you have your comment. Number one is,
this has been on file since
April, and of course, we had a public meeting on this meeting before this, and we had a public meeting on this one, on this meeting before that. And we also had a Saturday meeting that was exclusive, considered at the next meeting. And what Jacqueline was saying is true, that the public has a chance to read it, come back, and make their plea or their case to the board on whether or not they should adopt it or not adopt it. And at that point in time, the board can request staff. Number one is they could approve it, of course, approve the ordinance and vote in. They could request staff to take comments to come back and reintroduce the ordinance at the next meeting. But all of the board's options are still available at the next meeting. In other words, you're not limiting yourself to any particular course of action by introducing the ordinance now.
To respond to your comment that it's been available in April, I don't think the general public has been aware that there has been this rate increase, primarily for the reasons that I discussed last time that your agenda has been public. And I want to also comment that your agenda was public this time, so I'm glad there's been a change in there. But that's why you have partially what it has to respond to. You have to get people to.
Can you talk real briefly, Doug, about the timing of the proposed increases as they're outlined here?
Well,
Okay. What capacity charges are proposed? What we might
need to
report for
it is proposed that the, all of these, the capacity fees and the sewer rate fees, take effect August 1st and January 1st. The water rate increases will go into effect. basically, these fees that you see here were, are associated with the water would take effect January 1st, 1997. And the rationale of that is because the rate is being spread out the rate over the year, so that the impact on the user or the customer is not that dramatic. Trying to keep it less dramatic. The sewer rates on the Pomo Division and the Black Lake Division take effect August 1st of this year, and the capacity fees will take effect August 1st of this year. And the object is to get revenue back in so that these funds can be funded appropriately.
And that's,
if
it's all
the next part,
maybe not
on the day. Why don't we, I'm in Missouri in the Show Me State. I'm trying to see specifically where the fixed costs, what exactly is in these numbers? I mean, what the fixed costs are, what the variable costs are, what, how you establish that both the capital item, the capital, the money that we have, is, you know, where it came from. How do you establish it?
And that's very detailed in here, not based on historical numbers, but based on budget numbers. And I mean, it might
but
be
the past monies aren't based on budget numbers.
Right.
The past monies came from historical.
Right. And my belief is that Lisa worked with the auditor to reconstruct those things.
I have all the
so she has all the work papers for that.
I got them on my doorstep.
Okay.
It's
been
over to you.
That'd
be just fine.
I got an idea. Al's people are
going
to be what, Saturday?
Right.
Katie'd like to look at the document. Why don't we table this thing for the night then? So everybody can look at it and become comfortable with it and not do anything for the night then.
In terms of voting,
well, I'll make a motion to table this for the night then. And after, hopefully by then everybody will look at it and can do what they want to do with it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have one question for the fees that are outlined in here. Is there any immediacy associated with them regarding numbers that might change because of the postponement of board action? Significant postponement of board action.
Yeah, significant postponement.
Okay, let's say that this is not passed and no fees of any type, capacity, low, very low, or fixed, are instituted until January 1st, so
it would have a material.
Yeah, it would. And we looked at whether to establish the water rates on July 1 or January 1, and the revenue basis that the district needs, we should have gotten July 1. But trying to phase it in and phase all these programs in, we expect it to January 1. So why don't we go
my point is, if you put it out too long, the numbers change. They all go up.
And you know, like legal counsel mentioned, if I introduce this thing now, everybody can look at the numbers and everything else, and you can come back and they continue it at that time or adopt it at that time.
How
the longer
that
you go.
A couple of years, I don't see where.
Yeah, I don't see where 15 days is going to make that much difference.
Might make a difference as far as the rate. We have to raise them an extra $2.
Presented to her and everybody isn't really comfortable with this thing to be postponed or delay it for the meeting on the 19th.
Postponing the introduction.
Introduction for the
19th. Motion by Director Blair to postpone introduction of the ordinance until the 19th of June.
I second the motion.
I second by Director Simon. Let's see if that
that puts us a whole lot. I know we haven't voted on this yet, but Mr. Locke's availability, that would be required, wouldn't it? All right. Motion by Director Blair and second by Director Simon. All those in favor of postponing and projecting the ordinance to June 19th, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I'll say no. We need to take a roll call vote.
Director Blair?
Yes.
Director Simon?
Yes.
Director Mendoza?
Yes.
Director Fairbanks?
Yes.
Director Small?
No. Okay, so the motion is passed 4-1, and so this will be reintroduced and rediscussed on June 19th. And that concludes item 3 on the agenda.
I'd like to thank the board and commend them for their courage.
Okay, thank you for
showing up.
And don't drive home and sleep. Check into the hotel or something. Okay. Let's move on to item number 4. Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
This is regarding new office building design. Mr. Jones?
Yeah, Mr. President, district had hired Barry Williams, an associate architect, to design the new office building and putting the management presentation on his development so far. In the package, you have basically the floor plan and the elevations and the site plan.
And does this kind of generally meet the source of general design guidelines and the general plan of South County regarding, you know, breakup of exterior walls and moldings and windows and all that? I assume this is consistent with South County planning.
Yeah, it's been interesting watching the water rates too. I'm at these meetings and watching other architectural projects ahead of me and seeing any debates for that and wondering how I would be. Now I'm not. It's kind of nice. I'll see a quiet group now and waiting. Maybe waiting is good.
That's horrible.
The very first thing I have up there is our design considerations and. To answer your question on the functional considerations, the very top there, one of the first things we looked at was the long-range Pomo plan, which the county has put together, and in fact I have a copy of it here if people would like to look at it. And what it is it's basically a pedestrian-oriented type plan for the central business district. They have architectural style, they have breaking up of facades, different types of materials. It's quite a series of guidelines. We met with the county before even proceeding with the project and talked about where they are with that, how they, you know, what they see it going as, and talked to them about some of our earlier concepts before we had any specific ideas of what we wanted. I'll go through first the function before I get into the actual plans to kind of go through. So part of it's the easy access for both pedestrian and vehicular. Of course, the other thing we have to keep in context all the time is the accessibility for all people to get to the building. Part of it also in the site design is that in research the county is saying that you're in a floodplain here, raising of the overall floor of approximately 2 feet is going to be a requirement or flood proofing on that. The other functional considerations we looked at are meeting the needs of the district, and by meeting the needs of the district, I'm talking about really the whole entire district, the populace here, and part of that is making sure that we have a building that functions really well for the people that are using it, both the public, again, and the employees that are using it on a daily basis. We want to make sure they have easy access for the public, and that it works real well and somewhat of a dual purpose, something that can happen for tonight. One of the things that we've talked about early on is something we've done for the Heritage Community Services District, in which creating a meeting room similar, well, not similar to this, but a meeting room that might house a few more people,
that could be closed off and used as a separate meeting room for meetings such as tonight, and possibly even for other types of public facilities or for public type meetings that may come up in the community. So just looking from the going on the functional considerations, first what we looked at is a couple different things. We have Wilson Street here and we have Dana Street right here, and for those who aren't familiar with the sites right across the street here. And what we've got, and I don't know if it's easier for me to point here or to go up there, which is easier for me to go right here, okay. And so what we looked at is a couple different, we cited, and we had some quite a few diagrams of siting the building in different ways. The overall county plan shows more actually of an orientation along Dana Street, and yet having a long corridor that comes through across Wilson Street that creates a kind of a parking district almost in the future that would come down here. And we came and visited the site and did several things looking at it. After going through a couple of different plans, I feel that this orientation is probably the best orientation for several reasons. One is that right now in particular, all your access is really from Tepp Street across Wilson Street down at all, but the majority of your access is that way. The old building was oriented that way. The other thing is part of the program is looking at anytime you're doing a building on a piece of property, is looking at getting the absolute long-term maximum use out of the building. And we, with the parking and the way the parking worked, it allowed for some future expansion possibly out the side, out the back, and then a possibility of going up with it. So looking at that was the orientation the other way didn't give us enough of a bay to create the spaces we need within that and getting the same amount of parking for the future. So that was a consideration, and after it all kind of boiled down, it came out to this orientation. We felt it was the best out of the various orientations. The other things we looked at on this is that in orienting it, part of the thing is also trying to, part of the county plan is trying actually to make the building set really even closer than this to the street than like it almost right on the street. We feel it'd be nice to have a little bit of a buffer there, which could be landscaped to be a area that some of it we also retain water retention, etc., which some of that can work for, but allow for out here on the street to be able to allow for a nice front entry in here that could be the general public entry into the main part of the building for paying bills, asking questions, etc. on that. It provides for coming out of Wilson Street, it provides for parking along here as well as accessible area right here, where this, because we have to raise this up a couple feet, that this would provide for a ramp for accessible parking here, for a ramp to come up into this area. I'll show you the plan here in a second. For the most, I think, day-to-day use of the building, which you're probably going to find people coming here, Tepp Street Park here, come here up this walkway or park right out in front and come into the building. For your larger meetings like we're having tonight, there'll be more parking back here, and I can show you that orientation and for the parking for the meeting, etc. Why don't we go and the other one, actually going to end up with the floor plan, but I can show you up here what we have, and hopefully having scaled this down, you can still be able to pretty much read it. What we have is the main entry here. You've got Wilson up here and Dana Street over here. The building, again, has kind of two functions. One is to have the overall day-to-day business of the McCormick Media Services District, and the other is to be able to also have the nighttime meetings, possibly other types of forms of meetings, the public meetings. So it required kind of a separation of the building along these lines. And so the meeting room here could be separated off from the business side of the building, that there could be security there, et cetera, so people aren't, getting into this area. So part of the things we have to have is common facilities, such as the restroom facilities, that could be used by both sides at any time of day, morning, evening, what have you. It's very important also with the entrance to trying to orient the building towards the street side, is to have the lobby and the main information desk up in here close to the front door if we could, so that as people came in to know if they had any business in the district at all, they come in here, they know right off about where to go to. It's right here. We kind of got a split counter here so the two different meetings could be taking place. One counter's kind of in front of the other counter, so that you had a little bit of privacy there. Somebody could be paying a bill, somebody could be asking questions about upcoming water. The overall working of it,
retail input from the district itself, looking at the different places here, about having a good access, a visual access to its front, from both Don and also back at that cap, and looking at the point that somewhere there may be some rooms, they've got a large work area that they have to put things out on a regular basis, but there may also someday be another person in there that may be required that space for that person. And then more private type offices for police and for drug, kind of a field workers area in here, and then the Commonwealth file cabinets and everything is out there and found space for everything that we get inside here. The other thing was a conference room that would be used on smaller type conferences when people came in for different types of clients. And so we had a conference room that could really work on both functions. It can work from this side for even perhaps even the people in here meeting in a small conference room here. Or it can also work out the meeting room over here. We can come from the meeting room. It might be a board adjournment or something where you want to talk and you just be in the room where you can easily come into here and move in this conference room here. We're also proposing that to be a lunch room, which would be a double function also. It could serve possibly as being something that could serve into the meeting room for perhaps other types of functions. It also allows for the day-to-day use of the other people working in the building. Now, as I mentioned, the parking, the day-to-day parking is kind of over here. We have this access in and through this way. The other thing that we're proposing is that the main parking area being down here, there could be a walkway that maybe we put down back to the
would that be approximately where the Pomo Library modular was?
The modular still stays right there. It's right off the property, but the modular is right about here. I think right in this area right in here. The parking's right along there, and there's a fence that goes not quite on your property, like the lockers are on a tree and comes down. This is the edge, this is the far corner because of the big of the building is behind that. So you have a slight angle to your back property on here. So you're looking at the main meeting area that people can come in here and park, and that there'd be access right into the meeting room in here, and then having expandability outside in both directions for standing room only crowds, things like that. And again, possibly in the future, that outside here, that this would be opened up both sides here for needing possibly a PA system out there so people could hear on that. And also in the future, the expandability that we need, the building could go out in that direction approximately another 20 feet from that here when you move the game up. That's more important to expand the building on that. We look two bases, and then two bases where we expand. One is out this way, and then one if this is required out in here. That's like I'm pushing the parking off the building on the other side. It's really now we've got a door here and a door here, and so it could be a situation right around here into it. We thought about that. One of the problems is just the overall noise cost, perhaps, inside there. If someone's doing things inside or cleaning up whatever, it's a little harder to keep that down. With you. Probably, I think around the same distance people are doing it. So kind of mixed that one. We think about doing that sound. So we're thinking about the mechanics of the building. One of the things we're very that we think about, and especially any building, but in public buildings in particular, are the economy of the building, the overall economy of the initial construction cost, and listing them to do the lowest cost you can for the most durable materials and then maintenance, and that's the goal. Now, it's not like the word because it's a little difficult. But one of the things, if you look at this is an absolute rectangle. What we have here, the overall structure itself is a basic box. We're looking at using the simple truss systems, etc. And then embellishing the building to make it not be just a box out on the street, embellishing it with other things such as popping out entryways, trellises, and making sure you kind of front entryway here. Coming up to the building is to go ahead and you want to create a brow kind of all the way around the building and have an overhang all the way around the building so we'll turn the building as we turn this go ahead. But in front, and in front on the medium side, and on the far side over here, which would be on the Main Street side, creating kind of trellis gabled ends on this that this would then create a sense of entryway, as well as some lower planters in here that are a little extension, low level out from the building, to kind of create an overall effect of kind of grounding this into the ground, bringing the landscape down, giving it some richness. without putting a lot of money into the cost of moving walls in and out and doing things like that. Using some elements such as some overhanging kind of rafters on the end so that we create some shadowing onto the building, creating kind of a really detail of the windows and popping the windows in a little bit and then bringing kind of a sill out within the building room and a stucco finish, and then all these elements in here being in a wood trim for keeping turning the corner of the building. Looking now over from more from the Dana Street side, this is what we're looking at here, and which would be the offices here, creating this little trellis kind of protocol here with a planter down below to come out over to the sidewalk. And the other thing we're looking at is the energy efficiency of the building, and looking at how to create as much daylight throughout the building as we can. So natural daylight to help on the energy, to help on daylighting of the heating of the building, etc. And so we've looked at pretty extensive studies on overall weather conditions, looking at the sun shading, mapping of it to see if you can keep the direct sunlight out, with the bouncing sunlight across the building. That's what some of this is up in here. At this particular point here, going into the office area, there's some natural daylighting in here. On the back side here, this is actually, if you remember that conference room is in the center of the building, as the gym is created, a window up in here that would actually go into the conference room to provide natural lighting into the conference room. Like it's got actually a section of that, I think, that opens to the area. Yeah,
that's
the
conference room.
Yeah, that's the
medicine I'm taking.
No, I'm taking the heart medicine that makes you pump.
Your high blood pressure pump.
This is pretty much a section right through the building. You come in from the street out and here, you walk up these steps in the lobby to be here, and then the restrooms coming up to here. Conference room, this is what I talked about in the conference room. It's kind of a closed off area here. It does create a clear story back in here. So it would be shaded, it would create a lot of shade. Very lightly see it, but then we've also created some sun angles in here, which we'll be using this interior section here to help bounce light off into from off of this plane into the ceiling plane back down to light up to give a general lighting to the conference area on that. Also, I think we'll have the conference area by the volume and stuff on the ground, we can feel a little bit larger too. So, look at those concepts. You know, we didn't do that. We thought about looking at that, and I think that might be something we might look at possibly from the other side of the building, some natural. The one thing that we're doing, it's not shown on this particular diagram, is that we are looking at also the above the rest of the screens and the mechanical meters to feed each side to split the system so that it could feed, half of it could feed the office side, and the other system could feed the meters. So we're looking at using that up there.
There's skylights in there, except on the left.
It would, that's true. And I think we might be able to do both and create a light shaft inside there and allow the mechanical to come out.
Some kind of solar water in there?
You know, it's something that we've promoted for a long, long time in doing that. However, the cost these days, it used to be when Southern Cal Gas and different people subsidized it. It was in a situation in which it made sense to use it. The latest cost that we've done on it, the actual cost of the system itself, payback time, and I'm looking at small office and large residential on that, so it probably fit within them. But the payback on that won't give you the payback over the period of time that the usable use of the system is that much. The costs aren't there, and it's unfortunate because I think a good way to go from an energy standpoint. Now, what we may look at is a preheat system, perhaps, which is like a bread box type, either to be a preheat as opposed to a full-blown atmosphere system.
I know,
my house is on solar too, and don't pay much at all, except that I know my neighbor only pays about $12, $14 a month. And I look at the cost of the system, and it's $3,500 to $4,000.
That's right. We're supposed to be setting the example.
Yes.
That's part of it, too.
Well, no, I agree with that. I mean, past, we did a library use with Cambridge, which is a total passive solar library, and that was part of the plan, too. do that, but very difficult, really, to see if the liquid passes so and if you have to. We are definitely from siding of the building and looking at daylighting, insulation, things like that, really looking at the energy, overall energy is critical, and it's very strong.
One other thing we're probably going to need to set up on the bicycle people is the bicycle thing.
No, there should be some out there. You're right. That's it. I should just be agreeing with you.
The horse post.
Well, yeah, the horse post, I think I put one out front. Yeah, the horse post out front, I think it should be out there. But I think bicycles, you need the bicycles. And actually, something that I was noticing today on the plan is that something that the county will require, too, I think is actually coming more to focus on us. We also have more than enough parking to meet the needs of this building by about 10. Oh, okay. Good. Okay. Get a bike on. But there are questions. One thing we have to look at too is the overall drainage gouge for the building. One thing I would look at is also to look at the proposed possibility of some water retention that could be pumped back for gray water use, possibly back in the building that was pulling off of the wheel and possibly off the parking area to recycle some of that water. Something that's still somewhat in the surface, it's starting to get out of different areas.
Mr. K?
Mr. O'Kins, on the Wilson Avenue side, the drawing there, to the right of the entrance, is there a ramp going up on the, along the side of the building there?
Right here there is, yes.
Is that what that was?
That's what this is right here, what it is. You have your accessible parking here, and it's pretty level to here, and then it goes up
around. Yeah, I saw on that, on the showing the front elevation, it looked like a ramp.
There's a ramp off the parking and then the stairs straight off the street. And so the listing of your van is just for parking stairs like that.
Is
there a small utility in the concert that runs almost on top of your property line right here, which is the overhead. But that's all I saw in the survey.
How many people in your meeting room are coming here?
It may not work for tonight. What it is, the meeting room itself is probably about 6 feet wider and it goes a little beyond Doug's wall back there. The far wall of this is what this is.
What's the story?
About 6 feet wider than that.
Could you give your name, sir, so we can have 4 minutes?
My name is Bob McClellan.
The storage we're looking at is for like folding chairs, things like that. It could be brought out. I think that there's some other things in there too that were I think office type storage that you were looking at.
Fire proof vault
also. So
I just wondered if it could be expanded.
I think we really got a good inventory of what all would be going into there. We certainly look at that. We did this primarily, I think, off of some past buildings, and Harry Ranch in particular, which is a similar type building, and that's some of the requirements to go off of that. And we talked to the district too. But I don't have an actual reading of all the things that we've been doing, but we can look at that. Right now, you're at about 3,900 square feet.
Basically, you already have hiring an architect for moving forward, and you've gone up with the plans and working with the county. And you know, when the plans are all coming back and everything else, we're finalizing the whole thing in the working plan based on this concept. Then we can come back to work and use the final ones to go up and work.
Know that next time. Yes, I thought it would be kind of nice to see all that. You had a question.
Yeah, this is Jacqueline Frederick. I'm with a group called the Ultra Lacoma Association, and we've been brought together and working with the county to actually implement some of the things that we saw in the South Carolina plan with regard to the commercial district, which includes the area, the site where the building is. And one of the things that the South Carolina plan says with the intention of care treatments that was based upon a survey that was done in the community is the architectural style, which is contemplated to be pre-1940s, probably either Western or Victorian. And part of what we're planning to do is to ask all developers that come into our commercial district to adhere to that, because what we're trying to do is create a village concept in our old town area. So I was wondering if you have that in mind with developing your architectural style. So how would, I look at your drawing and I characterize it really as 50s grad style. I'm having a hard time seeing either the Victorian or the Western.
Well, I think that there's a couple things that have to play into that. One is that I think you've probably seen much more Western, you had like a wood siding and things like that. One thing is the maintenance. No.
No, I don't wear a house.
Oh, no, I'm not saying
that. You want stucco, you want something to paint everything.
Well, that's right. That's part of the thing coming into it. But there's a number of different things that play. But what we looked at a lot was, number one, the math. We kind of drove around here and looked at one of the things that we saw. Driving on some of the other ranch houses around, some of the barn structures and things like that. And one of the things we did come up with was actually on the other one, but this is more of a kind of break in the roof plane is one of them. Coming with that, the wood kind of implements this is not necessarily Victorian, but certainly craftsman. There would be,
I see the attempt.
Well, it's hard to say, you know, when you're looking also at a kind of a conceptual sketch, too. But that's the intent of bringing in some of this, some of the more craftsman style type details into this, bringing kind of the, you know, this type of a brow that you see a lot of times in the ranch houses and that, working with the scales and other things, trying to keep the scale into kind of a compact type building that I think you'll also find in more of the kind of rural type architecture with it. We did have, we looked at it, we, with some of the things with the stucco, it was a natural to say, well, maybe it should be, more of the, you know, kind of a pile type, Spanish type, which if you go to the county, they'll say that's one of the things that they'd like to see. But at the same time, they have no problem with the overall kind of, you know, using some of the heavier wood timbers in conjunction with the plaster on that, and bring you to those details, and that's what we were looking at in particular. Actually, we're looking at using a metal roof on it. And the corrugated type metal roof on it.
Is that what, what's the material on that facing on the roof above the portico there, and that striped, it's
kind of... This here?
Yes.
That's all I'm going to get another roof.
The colors,
huh? We're still playing with the colors on that, looking at that.
Lavender.
I'd like to, to be honest with you, I'd like to see it almost like we've done up there, almost in the kind of, almost a galvanized baritone. Okay. Rustic galvanized, yeah.
So it's going to kind of depend on the color of the stucco.
It does. We're playing, like I said, we have one scheme up there, which I don't like the green in, so we're kind of playing with that. We've done another one, we tried using a redder type with it also. We're still kind of playing with the colors on that. We're going to have it in the wood.
Why are you going to say,
you're not
going to say, I don't think I've ever seen it. Is there
any around here? Barns and things around? There are certainly,
yeah. Is that part of the rustic look?
That's what we're looking at, yes. It is, yes. We're kind of looking kind of like more rustic type look on it. There's a little barber shop that's around the corner up right here. There's a little freestanding kind of roof. It's a real typical tin corrugated that aren't going quite that rustic.
That's not as bad as an ASAP.
That's one of our buildings.
I know, it's a historic, it's an historical reference.
Okay.
Yeah, it is a historical reference. So,
our son going in Santa Maria on Main Street, there's a couple of businesses by the railroad tracks. They're using this simple, yeah. There's one layer of wood siding and it's corrugated on wood. And then the Five City School Club, I think, has wood on it. I believe that. The new stuff is quite attractive.
Yeah. I think Depot Square down on Main and Depot Street.
And we can have a crumb test and let the crumb pick the color.
We let ATAM pick any color. It's a good contest always. So subjective. So. But that's it. Does that answer your question?
What's on the other side here? Is this a street or is this another?
No, that's the little old house next door with chickens and things like that. But, that's right next door there. You'd ask if I were right in here, this is kind of a... unkept lawn. That's a 16-foot drive right there. The one we park down here is a 16-foot.
So, well, getting back to the county, a lot of people drive over. The county has idea is putting parking behind every corner. You don't want to go in anywhere at a motorhome that you can't get out. And especially when you think of that when you think of business, because you really build a bunch of businesses downtown, and you put parking behind a person that's going through their motorhome chores and never going to go behind it. You know, you never drive behind anything that you can't get back out by
Yeah, part of the idea, if people are going to see this first and just come in this front door,
and
then they can loop all the way around and come back out.
And that's basically what you want to do.
Are the existing, the little peppers thing?
Yeah, these along here now. Well, up front here, these along here, I think is good to stay. These are we're looking at removing. The ones that are tearing up the sidewalk, and I'd just sit in your car for about 5 minutes on one of those, tearing and dropping on. So these, yeah, this has been played a lot of hours on the street, and these we're looking at keeping one along. They seem to be pretty good.
And hopefully that's this cypress over here.
Oh, there's a bunch of cypress that actually right in here along the front, and I don't know, I've got to talk to the landscapers to see if there's a potential that they could be transplanted, maybe along this wall back here, with that tall, solid wall that would possibly the cypress could be put in there. I don't know how well they're transplanted. I wonder that much.
This is what Chris said,
this is
never
tell you to put these days in here. Asian brown, okay. No. What sort of color do you like?
Purple.
Okay. So you're planning
that to be
up that
your front entryway is just
going to
be a plain wood,
and
is that
on the side? We're out here now.
Yeah.
What we're looking at is actually using the out in this area, we're looking at this being all built of timbers. It's probably roughly large, like 6x6 or something. You know, we have lights in here, kind of bolted connected. So this whole entire thing would be wood in here. The background that they're going in, and even these lower planters would be plastic.
So
we
think
we're
painting
them,
or
is that? I would think more like stain, probably. More like a transparent type stain of some sort, not really painted.
You think it feels like exposed beams that are on the overhang there, they could be stained.
That's what I was looking at too, is probably doing that same thing to stain out all the wood kind of the same way. These guys built it, look at these two, they actually built it from four columns and there's a series of those steps with these beams going across and these heavy members coming out.
So. Can you find something that would show us like that?
You probably could.
As long as it's low water use.
Low water use. No, but you could. There are things that you can do like that. Yeah. And especially being back in here, also doing some things back in here on these trellises as well as on the other side. And kind of go up.
Once you step from now on, what you plan to do?
We go from here now is kind of working on the engineering of it. Kind of hold up what was the other meeting one, and we're working on the engineering as far as the overall fine tuning. We're starting to put together kind of a rough outline of specifications. Doing the structural engineering on it, mechanical engineering, kind of going through what's called design development phase, and we're bringing in all the various materials and studies for that. We will be coming back when we get into more fine tuning of it, like exterior elevations, details, and things, and be providing you also with those as we go along and develop that. I'd say that the design development should probably be done within about a week, week and a half, I think, if you know right now. Kind of gone through the outline specifications. And I'm hoping probably in about 4 to 5 weeks from now to be able to have pretty much a preliminary package put together for the building committee at that point. We can walk through the whole thing prior to us going ahead and submitting it so we have a chance to look at the various things that we're doing at that point.
Is it better to raise it or water?
You know, I think it's better from just having done one, I think it's better probably to just go ahead and raise it. What I suggest is coming in with the foundation, building up the foundation, kind of compacting, and then putting the slab on that. But some of these lower planters and things, we can kind of build up to that from the outside. And then you're not having to deal with when you go ahead and waterproof it, you have to usually put on the floodgates and all these other things all around. And if you know, we look at even doing a raised floor, which in a lot of cases is good, but then you have to worry about having to get air intakes for underneath to floodproof or having them up. And so in the past, from a construction standpoint, a cost standpoint, it probably is better to go ahead and raise it up. Yeah, actually use a perimeter foundation and fill inside that and then put your slab on top of it. So you're not doing a complete structural type a raising of it. Of your, structure.
I live in a hole. No fun.
Any other questions?
From Main Street level.
Oh, really?
No, I think the same thing simply occurred in the front step.
Yes, cost estimate.
Right now, from just a volumetric cost, I think you're probably looking at probably right around $100, $105 a square foot, somewhere in there from a volumetric standpoint. I think the overall structure, and what I have to kind of look at, if it was typical construction that we were doing, private sector, I think it would be less than that, but when you have to get into the prevailing wage, you have to rent, and I believe that's correct, you still have to do the prevailing wage. I know at Heritage Ranch, that raised the cost, I think, about 15-17%, something like that, by going to have to go to prevailing wage. You need to have to pay the prevailing wage. Not necessarily you need to have to pay the prevailing wage.
How many square feet?
About 3,900 square feet.
That the I'm sure that factors in the high current of electrical systems and civil computers and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we went through and looked at the needs on that for dedicated circuits for the computers and speakers and all that. And what it doesn't really probably factor into is any special furnishings that is more just the actual complete shell of the building as far as the carpet, wall finishes, ceiling, everything else in there would need the furniture. Some cabinet repairs and built into it. Probably going to be more than looking at just the preliminary look. It's probably going to have to be a 400-amp circuit on that, allowing for separate circuits for the various computers, dedicated circuits and things like that. I think it's probably better off of that.
The one thing you're going to look at the next week or two, or 4 or 5 weeks, when this development phase, the natural lighting possibilities of the bathroom?
Yeah, we'll take a look at that. Go back and look at that. Because we certainly looked up, most of the areas we did in the bathroom partly was because of just the situation of mechanical lighting.
Applying a loan, professional services are requested for engineering and the government plan to put the loan together to meet the requirements of the state. Attached to the resolution approving the agreement with Perry Lock for the Financial Times and Gary Taylor and Associates for the engineering that you can go on to clarify the requirements of the loan program from the state.
What reason is the distinction between this engineering and maybe other engineering that we've done already for the sewer and the master updates and
all that good stuff? This will go through plans and specifications, environmental documents have to be put together, certain loan documents, there's a large green book that Lisa's kind of more familiar with the administration of it than I am associated with that. There's a bunch of hoops and loops you have to jump through to get the loan. And Jim Gillen has been talking to the representative of the state indicating what needs to be done and certain engineering aspects that there's a value of engineering document that it does not have to be complied with, but plans and specifications and certain items in the specifications can't be proprietary, they have to be general And so the existing plans that we have are more proprietary, so therefore they have to be modified to be more general community park. And a lot of touch-up, coating, trim, things like that, instead of the bulkhead. The bulkhead has been done based on the design that Gary and Karen have already completed. Not before Cambridge, but he's done it. In your project report, environmental report, a draft revenue plan, a water conservation plan, and a whole application all are involved in there. And then the report has to be approved, the draft has to be approved, the environmental document has to be approved, and the water conservation plan has to be approved. All of these documents need to be prepared.
By the state or the county?
By us, to be submitted to the state.
Guides all that stuff there.
Right. And then based on the revenue program something. And like we talked some by going the TIER program, that kind of qualifies in the conservation aspect of having a TIER program with the flat rate. Those are all things that they probably look at.
My copy has a handwriter with 75 calendar days for future consultant.
Yeah, you might have about 90 because
still okay for a time frame and qualifying for the loan. This is the loan that has an effective yield of
1.6%.
Given all these
fees, 4.6%. $40,000 for the fee, get $1 million loan.
Yeah, that's about what it looks like. $34,500.
Yeah, they're going to be looking at the plant to see what is eligible. There's not anything that was grant put in which is to upgrade the property, not be eligible. But something new would be eligible.
Staff has discussed this
earlier. When they get all that, they did all that stuff for the sewer improvements, did they do some of this or no?
Well, yeah, the fan expansion, the design for the fan expansion, that basically we're taking that to modify it to meet the record plan.
See, what I really got a problem with is we're raising people's water rates, and since I've been on this board, we've spent about $150,000 just on studies, consultations, this kind of junk. And
how else do you do it, Bob?
Huh?
How else do you do it?
I don't know. I'm just saying we spent a hell of a lot of people's money on stuff that really hasn't so far produced anything.
I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah, it made Gary and Taylor probably do Mercedes-Benz, maybe. I understand that. I'm not saying it's not worth it, but I'm saying we're spending $40,000 to $1 million.
You know, whenever you open bid something, you get sort of pumped up.
I'm not questioning. What I'm saying is we're spending a lot of money on services and whatever they're spending.
Well, I just thought, like, somebody commented, there's another way to do it.
Yeah, that's
why I'm doing it. I'm assuming that Mr. Jones, in his experience of dealing in this field, has taken all that into account and decided that this is the technical end of it. I tell you, I depend on Mr. Jones to really make the decisions of this type of. Of course, you can question it, but I think we just almost say that there's something wrong with the procedure is appropriate.
No, but like we're paying a regular CPA, now we're going to pay another CPA, like we're talking about the CPA, or something like that. Or is that just our
fault? Well, this is to the audit, and this is a CPA in the staff.
So why are we paying $5,000 for another CPA to do whatever it was? It can't be that much, too.
The hard part is, you know, you look at the budget, and like the lady was saying, you know, our budget expands as far as the road.
But then also these people still, this doesn't make sense to me. It's not financial sound thinking of what's going on.
The ultimate goal is to obtain a 0% interest loan. If you don't obtain that, we have to do the sewer plant expansion. And what means are we going to finance that project?
Right.
And this is financially the best way to do this, is if it's more than
just one thought. And that's just one thought.
Well, that's what we're talking about right now, is we're choosing. I mean, I'd like to sit down with you and go over some other things. Because I'm concerned about, you know, the things that you're asking about, and I think if we sit down and go over it, maybe we can get a mutual agreement, and maybe you can give me some direction, or I could, you know, try to talk to you about it. Because I think we're on different wavelengths.
I think that any business that has growth and is growing almost demands outside consultation. You simply can't do it from interior. I think if you would review businesses, you'd see that to be a very true thing. One of the good things about having people like this, like Perry and the Garing people and so on and so forth, is that they spin off a lot of information to us that's of great value. Perhaps not at the moment, but certainly downstream it's of great value. And I think we are getting some excellent people in here. I've been very impressed with them. I would hope everybody else would be impressed with them. And I agree very much with Alex that this is Doug's expertise, and he's producing it, in my view. And I would so make a motion that we go ahead with this.
Doug, did you have anything further to add?
No, there's just a resolution basically approving the agreements with Garing Taylor Associates for $34,500 and Perry Locke for the revenue program of $5,075. And also requesting the authorization of order to the contract for approval.
Any
Well, and he's left professional services enormous amount of business trying to look at the product and the people that are the individuals and trying to stuff the best person for. And like Mr. Locke has just finished one up for the templates and some other results. So, you know, the networking of consultants is very, very important. Who they know, who they talk to, it's extreme. You're going to go out and hire a top-notch engineer, but he doesn't have any contacts in South America. Don't go at least, you know, 30, 60, 90 days. Mr. Graham has been talking to Joan up there, this process alone. Gary has done the same thing, process the financial plan to the person. He knows what the needs are and communicating. And I think that's the expected on the piece. You get someone here that hasn't been here, probably close to come.
What's the determination where it has to be? Professional fees do not have to.
That's correct. When you're hiring professionals, there is no requirement that you go out for a bid. When you're hiring a building or constructing public facilities, that's two different requirements.
Like some other major projects, we go out and request proposals from professional services. These, I think, are within the realm of $5,000. Tiny quick proposal, get anything else is going to have to
do. Plus, I don't know, for my part, I like the comfort of going to someone who has experience in this area.
And
so nothing more than the fact that it's a very large fence, you don't have to redo it. You're caught in a trap of having the wrong information.
Is there public comments out there or questions?
The resolution that's proposed is 96-581. Resolution of the Board of Directors of the Employment Community Services District approving one contract for engineering services, Garing Taylor & Associates, and two, a contract for a revenue plan with Perry Locke CPA. This is regarding acquisition of a loan for expansion of sewer plant, 0% interest. We have preliminary motion by Director Simon. Would you give me that motion again?
Yes. All right, so moved.
And a motion by Director Simon to accept and adopt the resolution. Do I have a second?
Second.
And a second by Director Mendoza. Can I have a roll call vote, please?
Director Simon.
Yes.
Director Mendoza.
Yes.
Director Blair.
Yes.
Director Fairbanks.
Yes.
Director Small.
Yes. Motion passed. 3-2. Item number 6 is the fiscal year proposed budget. Mr. Jones?
The proposed budget was previously handed out to the board to review. I suggested that study session be looked at. We can revise it slightly based on discussion on the rates and present it to be modified next week to you. And in next week, and I suggested maybe having a study session on June 10th to review the budget so that the board gets more comfortable with it on the expenditures and revenue.
What day is June 10th?
Monday.
So it's Monday or Tuesday?
Preferably Monday, just recently going on vacation the latter part of the week, so we can kind of modify it at the board then, maybe the 10th.
What time?
Whatever the pleasure is.
Yeah, that could be in the evening. I'm looking at my daughter's dance schedule. And the 10th and 11th are okay for me, any hour I'm comfortable.
You want to meet every time, 7 o'clock? 6 o'clock?
7. Remember, can you guys get dinner down by? Or is that like,
I'm not sure that we're away from work later, but wait, what's wrong?
I don't know what time.
That'll
be the study session for the budget. 26, 97. But did you want to give us any preliminary information?
The original budget that you were given last month or at the beginning of the month was based on very loud report, and so I will have to do that. I'll be sending the new one because I can't fill in the budget proposed rate of the delivery that we give now.
Right.
So I will propose to budget to rate as they are today and pay
we're going to have to move them back because they're all budgets for July 1. We have to move them back. Yeah. We can do it either way.
Whatever.
Sounds like a nightmare. Is that right?
No.
Okay, yeah. We need the numbers without influence of any increase of rates. And the numbers with the influence of the proposed rates by Locke we already have. So we'll bring that with us.
Well, Black Lake was, when I did the original budget, it was with the Black Lake rate at the 29.25 in the first year, and I believe if the board does go over the rate, we'd be able to probably pull up this year's rate structure, so that one will have to be modified.
So we'll include that $80,000 quantity.
The quantity is just what you have.
That appears to be the only one that even has a... Yeah, that's subsidization. I transferred $80,000. The tiered income is up $229,000. It's probably the only one that I don't have a chance of going. So, good time for that. That's the soft impact here. Right. Okay. Any public comments or questions on that? My meeting will be June 11th. 10th. Excuse me, that's a Monday, 7 p.m. All right, and item number 7, notice of completion for the Test Street Highway over 101 overcrossing.
Mr. President, you're on the board, approved a contract with R. Baker Construction Company on February 15, 1995 to construct water and sewer lines across the overcrossing Highway 101 and Test Street. Those improvements are now completed and the contract is based, and therefore when it's completed, a notice of completion is filed by the district and therefore it's before the board for approval. After it's filed, 35 days after that, if no things are coming forth, then the district makes the retention payment to the contract. So this motion to approve the notice of completion to be ordered.
Do we have to, we expect to go to the Caltrans and New Road.
And you can either authorize President or the managers to execute you.
Any more discussion on that? Say the improvements have been installed and inspected.
Good looking overpass.
Yeah.
Great looking.
And a straight water line and two lanes through it.
Any public questions or comments on this?
Okay. A motion before us, and file the notice of completion regarding the crossing improvements for the district, and that would allow release of the retention funds. Do I have a motion on that, Bill?
I move that the notice of completion be filed.
Motion by Director Mendoza. Do I have a second?
Yes, second.
And second by Director Simon. All those in favor of filing the notice of completion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Anyone is opposed? Item number 8 is the approval of warrants. Those were laid out before us tonight, I believe, right?
I just point out the last item on the thing, it's flood well, it's $17,814.84. That's basically fixing the Eureka well. There's some pictures of the casing that split that caused the failure. I directed Floyd Wells to recondition the bowl, and I put a couple new columns in there that were pretty well squirted out. It was completed, and we had a couple days of problems getting the bad tee cleared up and the well cleared up, but it's now running. Before, when it went down, it was pumping around 800 gallons a minute. It is now pumping between 950 and 1,000 gallons a minute, approximately a 12 to 15% increase in efficiency. That well alone, we pay between $85,000 and $90,000 a year in electric costs. We anticipate that the recovery of that $7,000 would be come back to the district within 2 years in power savings because of more efficient This is basically part of the oil report, which indicates that all the wells should be revised and the efficiency is increased.
I have a question for Lawrence. Is it for John? Were there any charges or bills that you have to return?
No.
You came as an answer to
that.
I
do.
I got something concerning that. Can I jump in on that?
Sure.
This says, provide hydrologic support from the Climate Community Service District to include review of EIR for golf course development.
We're going to talk about that later.
Is that coming up?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Okay, any other questions or comments on the warrants presented? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve the warrants.
How about this side of it? Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the warrants.
Motion by Director Blair and a second by Director Fairbanks to approve the warrants. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, nobody's opposed. Item number 9 is the manager's report. Mr. Jones.
Yeah, Mr. President, you have a letter from Senator Jack O'Connell talking about the annual budget briefing, which will be held on June 6th at the San Luis Unified School District Office Administration at 5 p.m. And the board members wish to go. Of course, invited. The Chamber of Commerce is having a mixture for the recycling center. There's some correspondence that we've received from people from Cypress Ridge, which we've answered. Their correspondence. The Black Lake question in my comments, please let me know. The Black Lake sewer sag went, the current track 1912 went out there. One of the conditions of the improvements is that we share the cost of improving an existing sewer pipe in the golf course. The TV McCann went underwater and came back out, so we assumed that there was a sag, but when we dug the thing up, there was no sag, the pipe on it was laid flat. Looking back at the improvement plans, it was not constructed properly, so we're investigating that aspect of how the corrections could be made, but that's something that's down the line talk to the board and keep making aware of that. Another item is if there's a fire on the Santa Barbara County Chapter of Special District Association to have their annual dinner on May 30th. Of course, it's late notice. It's tomorrow night. Same place as the one previously. And Ralph Kim of the Special District Association lobbies will be there. He's an excellent speaker. Those who attended last year probably enjoyed him and the dinner. Anyone interested in going, please let us know. It's kind of late to make a reservation, but it's $25 for the dinner. And that would be a district expense for your board members. Also, I just mentioned that the June 5th meeting of previous mentioned has been canceled. That's one week. That's one
week. Oh, yeah, the Army. Yeah, because that water resource comes off.
Can you make that?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay. I will be there.
There's, I got a thing in the mail, too, for one on the 14th of June for something to do with the zoning and permitting and stuff. Yeah, but tell them I'm not going to stay for long. I'm going to go like, I can only get off for like 3 or 4 hours in the morning. Usually nothing happens in the afternoon and all the fun study stuff. Okay. Okay. I'm going to go on from like 9 to 12.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for volunteering.
Oh, I want to look at that and see if I can.
Okay, that's all for the manager's report. Did anyone have questions or comments regarding the manager's report?
Maybe I missed Cypress Ridge there.
Yeah, Cypress Ridge. Mr. Jones just briefed over that. Okay. There was a couple of letters from
Cypress Ridge. I think it's important to look at the LFM report of October 93, which is like the second to the last page, where at number 7 it says, in my information packet, I'm on saying the last page, which is the reference to the October 93 LFM report.
Number 4?
Well, I'm referring to number 7, slightly below it, which references number 4 above. And basically what that states is that the above is based on maintaining water flow to San Maria. And it says, out in the middle of the paragraph there is no hydrological factor, there is no physical or legal requirement that such an outflow continue. So basically this definition of overdraft really is not a legal definition. And if you kind of continue reading that, basically if that outflow was reduced, that supposed overdraft would, or overpumpage would cease to exist. And therefore there would be no overdraft. Legally. So you should be sure to look at 4 and 7 simultaneously.
Right. As previously mentioned to the board, there's an out-migration on the eastern portion of the Mesa, but an in-migration on the western portion of the Mesa.
According to that study.
Thanks for pointing that out. The, anything else?
Public comment? I just general public comments.
We've got director's comments first. I mean, comments to the manager's report.
Okay. I can't find the letter that was addressed to you by an individual who didn't want the carry out, the takeout.
Oh, turnout on the state road project? Yeah, I have a copy of that.
Yeah. Who is that fellow?
Brian Royal.
He's a general manager in the city of San Luis Obispo.
I don't know who that is. He's on the city council, did you say? No, he just lived in, I guess he's just a member of our citizen of the city of San Luis Obispo. I would suggest that he look at his local fire department out there, that the city council transferred $300,000 from a different fund into a fire fund to pay for the building. And also, if they had an emergency turnout to save our lives, they'd save themselves $2 million a year. I think you ought to look at going back there first before you decide to do it. No, this is in the city. He's just a member in the city council. A member of the city, I don't know who he is. He just lives in the city of San Francisco. And he's telling us we don't need that.
Well, the second paragraph is just, it's pivotal. He's talking about the increased, costs, the district residents and all that stuff. He's under the...
They're missing the point.
He's got misinformation.
Yeah, yeah. Right, there's not going to be any...
He missed a $5,000 to $7,000 cost. Yeah, I mean, that's... Well, he's worried about $1,600 an acre foot, not the cost of it.
Well, my point was, he worked $300,000 overcharge, over expense of the private property, and saving $2 million per year as an alternate way of supplying water to their own city.
Why don't you write a letter to that effect? You don't want to start going into a war.
It just, you know, you're beating
a dead horse.
Okay, the director's comments, do you have anything else? Okay. Anything else down here?
I just want to say thanks to the staff once again for the interaction with Terry.
Just
for putting all the stories together. Okay, public comments, item number 11.
John Snyder, Koch, California. Well, I saw today many copies of the financial report, and I'm hoping that you're applying the policy of $1.50 a page plus 20 cents thereafter, or about 17 bucks for copies of this document to all the people and not just to me. So when I check on that, I'm hoping that that has been applied evenly.
I haven't even thought about that, but I'm assuming that's the case.
Take the time and use it for no cost. You want a copy of it?
Okay. I'll ask them where if they got their copies.
Now, if the board member wants to give them the board.
Right.
We don't charge the board.
Okay. Any other public comments? It's over.
Just one small thing. The county went to two paint, both sides paper.
My experience is that those agencies that can afford high tech monster copy machines can't make out, but you know,
we can't do that. Okay, I just thought I'd
say that the staff's time spent on undoing jams more than
processing materials.
I agree.
I don't disagree.
I was just pointing out the economics of it.
Every time that you have to go across another tree.
Okay, well, I think that wraps it up for tonight. That was the last item. I see here that we've got a closed session with legal counsel regarding existing litigation.
District will be going into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 5495.6.9 to discuss in CSC versus Sheriff Oil et al. And that's case number CV077387. To discuss one anticipated case of litigation, Government Code Section 5495.6.9
for the medium large case that anticipated one.
So the budget is for next time, Jeff.
You'll know.
This time,
we'll get another budget out.
I had an interesting case where. Service that I represent has a patient that is dying.